I'm Emily White. This is the 7th of September at 4 p.m. I'll try to summarize a little what I said yesterday, share with you one of the dreams I had last night and did my homework, and mostly concentrate today on the person that I follow in my dream interpretation. That is Carl Gustav Jung, who lived from 1875 to 1961. He's a disciple of Freud's, but went beyond Freud. And I will also give you examples of a dream that Jung dreamt and that Freud dreamt to give you the flavor of it, as well as a bibliography of Jung's works and a chance to sign up for individual talks. Tomorrow I will talk more about the meat and potatoes aspect of the psyche, if you want to call it that. I've drawn an outline of Jung's approach. It's hard to see. I will explain it. Okay. I just put on the board so I would have it all there together. As I said yesterday, dreams often indicate that your psyche hasn't quite caught up with you. And as you know, I just arrived yesterday, and I want to share this dream with you quickly to show you specifically how I was still in Minneapolis. I was still at St. Martin's table. I was with Mary Schramm, very busy, and quite worried about getting to the airport on time. Well, I didn't fly, but I was worried about getting to the train on time. We have a lot of people at lunchtime, as we do in reality. It's a busy day, and again, I'm worried about time. And because we're 2 hours earlier than in Minneapolis, I'm still living Minneapolis time. At one point, Mary Schramm X's out something on the cash register, and I can't get to it, and I'm very frustrated. So here I'm frustrated about doing something. And then it is very quiet and we tell jokes. And then I tell her that I got a note from Mike Dukakis. Well, it so happened that the last thing that I had in the mail when I was in Minneapolis was a note from Mike Dukakis. And it was a personal note in answer to a supportive letter. So you see how all this scrambled together. Concerned with time, still being in Minneapolis, remembering a highlight of what happened just before I left, and finally I get to the train on time. So, just a personal illustration. As I said, I'll give you a chance to sign up for one-on-one discussions, because as much as I would like you to share dreams in this group, it is quite large and I really can't do justice to it because it would be just top of the head. All right. Who was Carl Gustav Jung? He was a son of a series of Protestant ministers, a Swiss psychiatrist, and he blazed a trail even beyond that of Freud in both dream analysis and in theory of the psyche. And I would like to read to you a biography that was written by one of his pupils, Dr. Barbara Hanna, a Swiss woman, a British woman. It is a book called Jung's Life and Work. It's a biographical memoir, and it goes hand in hand, or it should be read hand in hand with his famous, with Jung's own famous work, Memories, Dreams, and Reflections. Memories, Dreams, and Reflections is a very unique autobiography. It's an autobiography of his inner journey, of his dreams, of his memories, and reflections. You don't know much about his outer life. What Barbara Hanna does in her book, which unfortunately is not available here, but it's on the bibliography. What Barbara Hanna does is to tie in outer events with this book, with his inner life. So it is a fascinating thing if you really want to get into Jung's life. Jung was an average student. He wasn't quite a brilliant genius, actually. In fact, he didn't like school very much, and there's a story of him falling on his head and blanking out and missing school for 6 months and then having a hard time catching up. But when he went to college and when he went on to his degree, he got an MD and specialized in psychiatry. He not only was a good student, he was a brilliant thinker. And in terms of typology, which I will talk about another time, he was what you call an introverted thinking intuitive. He could think and see possibilities. He could spin theories. And today we're finding that many of the theories that he predicted or developed are really very useful, and he's coming into his own. In any bookstore, you will now see many books on Jung. He wrote 17, there are 17 collected works written in German, difficult to read, even if you know German. Most of them have been translated. Many of them are available in small Bollingen series like this one, Jung on His Dreams. Almost any bookstore carries those. Those are quite readable. They're translated by Hull, and I think he's ironed out some of the difficult German syntax. The extent of his work is prolific. He was also interested in things, mystical things, even UFOs, and was interested, wrote a preface to the I Ching, the Chinese, what is it? What is the I Ching? A Chinese way of predicting the future. And he has worked in the hospital, in the Burkholtzi Hospital as a psychiatrist, particularly with schizophrenics, and had remarkable success in bringing them to a state of greater normality. I don't think he would say he cured them, but he brought them to the point where they could function better. He worked with Freud, but they had a falling out, which is a very interesting story that is in this book as well. And he then had a private practice in which he saw his own patients at his house in Küsnacht, which is outside of Zurich, and right on the lake. And when I read this, you will see a picture of him, which I'll pass around. He had two very different sides. He worked with his hands. He built his own tower, and I was reminded of what the young men are doing out there. Worked with his hands, really, right in there. But at the same time, he was an eminent scholar. So with this, I'll just read the summary of this biography. Barbara Hanna is a friend and pupil of Carl Jung and has written a definitive biography. The book is written in chronological order and follows Jung from his birth in 1875 to his death in 1961. In addition to the personal, there's a substantial body of reference and a 5-page bibliography, thus it can also serve as a reference work. One of the interesting sidelights are those relating to the relationship and the break between Freud and Jung. They broke because of over an interpretation of a dream. And I could go into details, but it would take too long. Barbara Hanna describes the anguish that it cost Jung to write his controversial Symbols of Transformation. He broke with Freud precisely because he said there was more in the unconscious than just sex and death. There's the creative urge. There is the drive towards wholeness. There is wisdom, as I said yesterday, there's guidance, and there's the Christian view that God, the Spirit, speaks through dreams, and Jung was a Christian compared to Freud, who was an agnostic at best of Jewish background. Jung is shown as having suffered anguish also during World War I. It was during this period that he confronted his unconscious. He made the discovery of his own shadow, which I will talk about tomorrow. We all carry a shadow or a dark side, very painful and hard to recognize. But until we recognize it, we cannot become whole, because if we repress it, it'll come out some other way. And he found his spiritual guide in a figure he named Philemon, or Philemon, similar to the biblical book in the New Testament. He had a book in which he drew his dream images. And if any of you are artistic, I urge you to draw your dreams rather than to write them down, because they are images. And this Philemon came to him many times and spoke words of wisdom. So he's like a winged creature. It's very interesting to see those pictures. He also began his drawings of the mandalas. Do you all know what mandalas are? They were these kind of, like the Tibetan wheel of fortune. And I will talk about those next week. And he began his drawings of the archetypal figures, which I just mentioned. He wrote down all his dreams and analyzed them, as well as those of his patients, and wrote the book Memories, Dreams, and Reflections. During World War II, Jung suffered another anguish. And when he saw the war and the Nazis as a break, he saw the war and the Nazis as a breakthrough of the collective shadow. Barbara Hanna emphasizes that Jung was not a Nazi sympathizer, but rather was on Hitler's blacklist. He even had to flee to the mountains when the German troops threatened to cross Switzerland. Fortunately, they did not, and Jung was able to return to his home in Küsnacht. It was interesting to me to read how Jung was compelled to carve his insights into a stone at a tower at Bollingen. I was saying he worked with his hands. And there he did most of his writing, but not at the expense of seeing his patients, whom he continued to analyze until just before his death. He's described as a jovial man, but also hard-driving, temperamental, and unrelenting in the search for truth and wholeness. There are lots of stories that the secretaries had an awful time because he would explode, but he was aware of this, as well as always apologized. So, I mean, he didn't repress his anger. He's quoted as saying that nothing is as intolerable as, quote, not knowing. And he needed at all costs to make what was unconscious available to the conscious. And this he did by way of dreams. There is a lot of gossip about his relationship with his wife and a woman called Toni Wolff. And in Jungian circles, we love to do gossip like everybody else. But he managed, again, an amazing thing, and quite amazing for his time, in that because he had this relationship with Toni Wolff, which was very intense, she was one of his younger patients, he also brought her into the home, and Toni Wolff and Emma became friends, so that there was kind of a threesome. He needed both aspects of a thinking woman, which was his wife, and an artistic, intuitive person, which was Toni Wolff. But there was a lot of talk. Barbara Hanna tells amusing anecdotes how Jung decided to write a popular book called Man and His Symbols. After having declined the commission to write such a book, and he was 83 years at the time, Jung had a dream that he was talking to a large crowd of uneducated blue-collar workers. As a result of this dream, and these people understood him, and as I said before, he doesn't write very understandable German. He was talking to a group in his dream of uneducated people, and they understood him. As a result of this dream, he decided to go ahead and edit this popular book and write a whole chapter. And Man and His Symbols is probably a book you've seen in every bookstore. And if you get the book, I suggest you get the large one with the illustrations. So he gave us an example of how the unconscious can be a guide not only for his patients but for himself. Jung's theory of synchronicity is clearly expounded and exemplified in this book. I will talk about synchronicity tomorrow. It is an elaboration of coincidence, but for those of you who have to leave, I'll just say that it is a coincidence for which you can see no cause, immediate cause. It is connected unconsciously. The cover of the book is a visual lesson of Jung's most important contribution, the tension of opposites. And I have Xeroxed the cover, and I'll pass it around. You see here, Jung as a kind of farmer, and Jung as a scholar. And this is the cover of the book. The front, Jung, his life and work, is this man sitting here pondering, and sitting right near that tower that he built with his hands. And here he is, the scholar, searching for reading books in the library. Just pass this around to everybody. I just have one copy with me. So this book is kind of useful. There's also here a bibliography. And those of you who want to study more, I'd be glad to pass them out. I don't think I have enough. But there are all the references that I mentioned in the bibliography. Now, any questions so far? Because I've got lots more to talk about. You may have heard that Jung is well known for the concept of the collective unconscious. And the collective unconscious is so many layers below the consciousness that it cannot be retrieved through memory. Memory resides up here in the personal unconscious. Towards the world, we have a persona. When I meet somebody and say, what do you do, or where do you come from, you give me your persona. When we talk about dreams and we get more close and intimate, you may come to the personal unconscious, but only in an analysis or through your own analysis of dreams could you come to the collective unconscious. And again, we'll talk about that more tomorrow. It's there also that shadow, the dark side, resides, and that's where the archetypes sort of float like Evelyn said this morning, like these stones that float in the lava, those of you who heard her. And it is a dynamic thing. This is a diagram, and it's not static. We're constantly changing. We're also changing through life, becoming more and more individuated. Individuation is one of his great terms. That is, the best example is that we know more and more about who we really are. As an adolescent, we're groping, we're trying to find out who we are, and as we become more and more mature, we understand what ourself, what we really are, and how we relate to the world. The other concept that Jung uses is differentiation. And the best example I can give you is that before you go to Holden, come to Holden, Holden is a word. After you leave Holden, you have all these many different differentiated experiences that make up the word Holden. So that everything you experience in life is first an abstract concept and then becomes differentiated. Before you get married, marriage is some kind of ideal. After 36 years of marriage, you have a lot of differentiated experiences to go with it, right? I find Jung's theories very helpful, dynamic, and useful because, as I said, the picture I'm passing around exemplifies his theory of opposites. He talks about the tension of opposites within ourselves, the tension of opposites in everything. Whether you take a day and night, life and death, wherever you look, there are these opposites, paradoxes, and nothing is static. And so you can take comfort when something terrible happens. This too shall pass. It will turn into its opposite. Unfortunately, when you're extremely happy, you don't want to think that, oh my, there may be a time when the opposite will occur. But accepting the tension of opposites and going with the flow, as the young people say these days, is really the best way not to get trapped on one pole or the other. Because if you want to stay on one pole, and this I have experienced with my clients and just by myself, if you stay on one pole, the other one will kick back and really throw you, whatever the two poles are that you're trying to stay on. I hope I'm not too abstract. Please raise your arms if you don't, raise your hand if you don't understand. I would like to read two dreams, one by Jung and one by Freud. I'll start with Freud. Okay, this was a patient had a fairly long dream, part of which is as follows. Several members of his family were seated at a table of a particular shape. This table reminded the dreamer that he had seen one of the same sort when he was visiting a certain family, and from that his thoughts ran something like this by free association. In this family, the relationship between the father and the son was rather tense, and the patient said that his own relationship with his father were actually very much the same. So the table was introduced into the dream to indicate some kind of parallelism. It happened this dreamer had long been familiar with the demands of dream interpretation. We literally deny that anything in the dream is a matter of chance and indifference. Freud was quite dogmatic that every aspect of the dream is important. I don't quite agree with that. It is precisely inquiring into such trivial and apparently unmotivated details that we expect to arrive at our own conclusion. You may perhaps be surprised that the dream work should happen to that the dreamer should choose a table in order to express our relationship between my father and myself was just like the relationship between his father and himself. But even this is understandable when you learn that the family in question was named Tischler, and Tisch in German means table. This is the way Freud would go to such depths, and he looked for puns, and it's rather interesting. This is a classic example. Here's a dream by Carl Jung, and this was shortly after his wife died. I saw her in a dream, and she stood at some distance looking at me squarely. She was in her prime, perhaps 30, wearing the dress which had been made for her by my cousin. It was perhaps the most beautiful thing she had ever worn. Her expression was neither joyful or sad, but rather wise and understanding, without any emotion, as though she were just beyond the mist. I knew that it was not she, but a portrait she had made or commissioned for me, and it contained the beginning of our relationship, the events of 53 years of marriage, and the end of her life. Face to face with such wholeness, one remains speechless, for it can scarcely be comprehended. Do you get the different flavor of these two men in the way they describe their dreams? Jung does lean to the mystical and is very much in touch with the other, with the spiritual reality we talked about yesterday. I'd like to take a few minutes now for some questions, comments. It must be 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Everybody's more sleepy.
You said yesterday something about patterns in our dreams. Could you elaborate on that? Tell us more about
repetitive dreams?
Well, or either repetitive dreams or just
patterns.
You said something about seeing if you recorded your dream over a period of time, if you did that, then you would begin to see certain patterns in your dreams.
Yes. Several things. You can see patterns in the sense that when you're anxious, you have a certain kind of dream. And I have come to the point where I'll say, oh my, that's that kind of dream. I don't even want to write it down, but I usually do. But I also see a continuity of images, a repetition of images, and a kind of growth. After all, the psyche is both self-healing and evolving. Self-healing and evolving, so that you're not standing still at any one point. You may go up and down, but I think the growth is, he talks about a spiral growth. And so you can trace that individually, because you will see certain types of dreams recurring. But it's different for every person, you see. And it's a little different from a repetitive dream. It's not the same dream, but it's in an anxiety situation, you will have this kind of dream of not finding your way. Now, the one I shared with you, your psyche is still back somewhere while you've moved your body somewhere else. That happens quite often. And then you will see certain people speaking wisdom to you, and this is where you see the patterns. Whoever is your spiritual guide or mentor may appear in your dreams and say wise things that you really need to hang on to and work through consciously. Does that help? Yes.
I'm curious about remembering dreams. I ordinarily never remember dreams, but when I was quite ill, I had several significant dreams that are still so vivid. Mm-hmm. But after I felt better, I couldn't remember them. Can you call upon remembering your dreams? Can you ask for that and remember? Or is it something that's given you when you are in need? Or
well, both. The big dreams are a gift that you need to have at a time of distress, discomfort, sadness, whatever. They do come unbidden because they are the big dreams that you need to hear. But remembering your ordinary dreams or everyday dreams are a skill that you can learn if you wish to do so, because they are there. All you have to do is allow yourself the time, the space in the morning to close your eyes and let it rise and to write down at least the key sentences, if not all the details. So it is both a gift and a skill that you can learn. And whenever it's important, now many people have approached me since I'm here already and said, I had a dream last night. Was it you that you wrote down?
Yes, I had a dream last night. And I'd never written down my dreams before. And
so, you know, my talk has probably activated some things.
Well, but it helped what you said yesterday. It really helped if somebody wasn't here yesterday, and that was when you wake up, not to open your eyes. Just be aware that you want to record your dream and not to open your eyes, and then just before opening your eyes, try to recall it.
Exactly.
And I think that really helped me to remember what it was when I got up and I wrote down.
All right.
It worked.
That's great. Yeah.
Yes.
Emily, I had a letter from my mother yesterday, and she often asks me about her dreams. I record my dreams, and so she thinks I'm smart about dreams. But in it, she, normally her dreams are just like everyone else's, but when she dreams about my father, who's been dead about 13 years, she thinks that he's trying to communicate with her somehow. And I don't know what to say to her, because I don't hold with that. I think that he's symbolic. His presence is symbolic in her dreams, but she thinks he's trying to speak to her. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how to respond to her.
That's that very difficult place, because the fact that she dreams about him and he does communicate with her, but symbolically, as you said, it's not the real person, but it is his essence, I suppose, that which she needs to hear, and it's probably a comfort to her. And maybe we can talk about later how you could actually speak to her about it.
But you wouldn't hold, as she does, that it's some kind of a presence from beyond or something?
Not really, no.
It's from within, right?
Yes, but the spirit speaks through the unconscious, so that it's very borderline. I think we should talk about it afterwards. I can't really give a definitive answer except to say that the dreams give her the comfort she needs to be in contact with her husband over these many years. And whatever is of the essence in their relationship comes from her unconscious, and it's not a real presence out there, but it is of the spiritual world, which has a reality of its own. It's so difficult. I do believe that, I believe that there we continue to live on, but not body. So nobody has come back to tell us, so we just have to go on faith.
Jesus,
yes.
Could you elaborate a little more on the collective unconscious and what it is?
Well, it's a term that Jung coined to describe it's 4/5 of the psyche. There's more that's unconscious than is conscious. It is what Freud also called the unconscious, but he called it the collective unconscious to make a difference from the personal unconscious, which you can retrieve through memory. Everything you remember from your childhood is lodged in your personal unconscious. But the collective unconscious is nonverbal, beyond time and space, and only can be known indirectly through dreams, where I said they're like a mirror that hold up.
Collective mean that it is very similar or the same in all people?
I will have tomorrow, when I talk about archetypes, will you be here? I will talk about that in detail. He feels, it ties in a little bit with what Evelyn talked about, the volcanoes. It's like a magma underneath. The collective human experience runs through all humanity by the very fact that we're human. But our particular race, our particular culture, our particular family, and our particular individual history narrows this, colors it and narrows it so that what you experience is individual rather than collective, but it comes from this collective. Thus, there is birth and death and love. All these universals are experienced by everybody, but specifically, images and people will speak to you directly in a way that they don't speak to me, you see. And I'll talk about that some more tomorrow.
Yeah. Can you say something about the shadow? A little bit more about what the shadow is all about.
Well, I'll talk about that tomorrow too, but I'll preface it now. It's that which you cannot accept in yourself consciously, which you deny, which you project. If you listen to mean gossip, she's a terrible housekeeper. Well, I've already told you that I don't like housekeeping. So you see, I'm projecting part of my shadow side. It's not always a terrible thing. It's that part which is something you don't do well, don't like, don't accept. It varies from your weakness, we all have weaknesses, to real, dark, murderous things. Somebody once said, we all have a Hitler in us. And I said, oh no. But that's really part of a shadow. And I think I'll talk about that tomorrow too.
Could there be positive aspects of a person's personality that for some reason they haven't expressed, like because of their upbringing or something? Could that also be part of the shadow?
That's what we do mostly in therapy. One of the things that I did was to work with people who were artists who had not been encouraged in their creativity, and that was a very positive thing. And there was a computer operator who was really a good pianist, and he was knocking his head against the wall. He was earning a lot of money, but he was still unhappy working on the computer when what he really wanted to do was play the piano. We do that more or less much of the time, and part of our growth is to find out how to express our creativity with the gifts that we're given. We're all given many gifts. And I'd like to put in a plug for Mary Schramm's Evoking Gifts. Is that the title?
Gifts of the Spirit?
Yes. Mary Schramm has written a wonderful book on how to evoke the gifts, which we all have. And it doesn't mean being an artist necessarily, though that is really wonderful. But whatever you're able to do well with happiness and joy. There's another book that's out, I think, in our bookstore here too. Do what you like and the money will follow. Now, I know we can't all do everything we like, but finding a vocation that really suits you is the greatest challenge. and gives you much joy. And usually you make a lot of money as well, which is a byproduct. But we've strayed away from dreams, but that doesn't matter. Any more questions?
How about deja vu?
Oh, that is a similar deja vu, she has asked. Seeing something again, saying, I've seen this before, when it could not be possible that you've been in that situation before. I think it's explained partly by the way the light comes in, by a similar emotion, largely by that, and perhaps by some unconscious similarity, similar to the one that I read in Freud's dream, where the table reminded him of the bad relationship, you see. It's not quite the same as dreams.
Is it possible to dream an experience and then have that experience happen?
We'll talk about that tomorrow, ma'am. Yeah. Yes, it is quite possible. Just briefly, your dream energizes you, and you notice things. You notice and remember things that the dream brought up, and then so you're more aware of it. You see, you're simply, it hits you when you see a similar thing or the same thing. Anyone else? Yes.
How would you personally respond to, I have really vivid, very detailed, very odd dreams. And there are times when I remember all of my dreams, there are times when I don't remember many at all, but I seem to have these dreams that are just so odd. I mean, how would you even begin to interpret them?
Well, maybe we need to talk together and one-on-one. Briefly, all dreams are odd because they're irrational. And as we saw in this dream by Freud, actually, the shape of the table, well, a logical person wouldn't think that way, really, you see. And free association is very useful. Sometimes you're amazed how one association leads to another. But we can talk. I have a sheet I'll pass around. In fact, anybody who would like to talk to me can sign up. I've written some times. And I don't know how to do this. Shall we just pass it around now? Or would you like to come up to me and sign up? Maybe that's better. You had a hand up, sir.
Yes. I'd like to know whether do you relate any of these out-of-body experiences with dreams or anything of that nature?
You're asking about out-of-body experiences and if I relate those to dreams. I don't know very much about out-of-body experiences, but they are of that order, of that spiritual reality that Morton Kelsey talks about in this book, which I think is still available in the bookstore, Dreams, A Way to Listen to God. I must confess, I really don't know too much about that. Anyone else?
Would you say that all dreams then are significant, whether they're a gift or you practice your skill and remember your dreams? Or is there something about distinguishing what dream has a message and what dream is just a composite of what happened that day?
Yeah. Well, we have people who feel that every dream taken deep enough can yield some message. I'd say that, as I said yesterday, that most dreams are processing, dreams that process what happened the day before, and are not too significant, except that you don't remember everything. And the fact that you have remembered that aspect of the dream should say, this really hit me. Like in my dream there, I got many letters, but I dreamt about the one I got from Dukakis, you see. Now that really set me up. I didn't dream about the one I got from a friend or the junk mail, you see. So not everything, not every dream is significant, but each dream contains something that's worth paying attention to.
Say something about dreams. Repetitive dreams, the same dream over and over again.
Yeah, I touched on that yesterday, but I'll say it again, because it is upsetting to have the same dream over and over again. It depends what kind it is. Some are nightmares and very upsetting. Some are just the kind of almost routine, looking for something and not finding it, or missing a train over and over again, or things like that. They, again, if you have a specific one, we could talk about it, because they have a message that you need to make conscious. And once you do, the dream usually disappears. It's almost like a signal, you know. Hey there, listen, pay attention. So I will talk tomorrow more about the archetypes, which are the dream symbols that Jung talked about. And I could go somewhat into the other theories that Jung developed. He spoke that we have a self-motivated tendency to grow towards wholeness. And I think maybe I misunderstand what Jesus is saying to us, but he says, live more abundantly, become more whole. I think it is a similar thing. And I'm excited about my work with dreams, because it's one way to understand in what way I'm developing and growing. And this morning we had matins about pruning, and you must realize that some of the suffering and some of the unhappiness that we have to go through, some of the pain, is like a pruning that helps you to grow. We say suffering is the growing edge. It's very easy to say when you're not suffering, but it's good to hang on to it when you are suffering, to remember that some kind of growth will come out of this. Jung is forward-looking. He starts with the problem where it is and says, let us see where the dream points to, rather than going back into your childhood and starting from the time you were born to find out where the problems were, because that's the Freudian approach, which takes longer and is more painful, really. I said the growth is in a spiral, and it's helpful to remember that it's an image, that the spiral means that you go over the same ground, except with a little increment of experience. And if you've been to Holden before, you know how each time you come you feel, well, I've learned something new, or I'm in a different place. And when you come to places where you have troubles and pain or loss, if you have faced it once, the next time you come around, you have the experience of having dealt with it before. And I think the image of spiral growth is very helpful, both because we develop and grow by, as I said, individuation. Each person has an individual path that he should follow if he's to become whole, will follow too. Shakespeare said it beautifully, there is a destiny that shapes our ends, rough hew it how we will. I love that quote. And while I'm quoting, my husband is coming, he's a great quoter. There's a dream book in the bookstore. It's an Oxford Book of Dreams. It's most readable. I just discovered it. It's 1987. And it has it deals with dreams in literature, dreams in by different topics, and quotations from all the various places. And I just started reading it. So next week I'll have more things to say about this as well. I recommend this. Very readable. Just Dreams. And it's the Oxford Book of Dreams. Just came out. So you probably have the Oxford Book of Poetry and all the other things. Well, any more questions? What time is our picnic?
5:15.
This session goes till 5? Okay. Well,
I'm going to talk longer.
I'm happy to talk longer, but I need to know what direction you want me to go, because some of you have to leave tomorrow, and I don't want to take away what I'll say tomorrow, but there are other aspects of dreams and Jung and Freud. Yes.
Once in a while in a dream, I decide this isn't reality.
Mm-hmm.
this is a dream. And then I'm kind of think along that line, and then of course I feel somewhat more at ease because I figure, well, it's going to be over, and pretty soon I'll see to it is over.
And you wake up.
Right.
People vary in their ability to make themselves conscious while they're dreaming, and especially when it's a threatening dream, to say, oh, this is only a dream, and to force themselves to wake up. My husband can do that. It would be interesting to me whether there are differences in gender or whether differences in strength of character or type, whether, you know, but that is a skill or a capacity to keep yourself from dreaming a very frightening or unpleasant dream. Many people dream of falling from heights and always wake themselves up, almost always wake themselves up, just about always wake themselves up before they land and crash. But people do dream of airplane crashes, train crashes, car crashes, and there's not a one-to-one relationship between that dream and it happening. That has to be only in the case of a person who has the gift already of, you know, prophetic or ESP. So don't be frightened if you dream of crashes or death. And I'd like to say this. If you dream that somebody is dying, you ask yourself what that person represents to you. Somebody asked me, aspects of yourself. And that aspect of yourself maybe needs to die or needs to be played down or passed on, passed over. Specifically, I dream of a person whom I do not like at all. And this person dies. Now, it doesn't mean that I want to do them in, but this person represents to me a quality of dominance in the relationship. She's a very dominant woman and the husband's all kowtowed. I have a tendency. When I dreamt that, it was interpreted to me that this aspect of myself needed to be changed or die, you see? Then something new can grow.
So what you're saying is when we have other people in our dreams,
mm-hmm.
usually we see something of ourselves in that person.
Yes, very much. Very often. The more you look at your dreams, the more you will see what these different people represent for you. And we do see aspects of ourselves and others. And I might as well talk about this one thing. If we make love with another person, it doesn't mean that we want to have a relationship, sexual relationship with that person, but rather we want to take into ourselves some of the good qualities, positive qualities, that this person represents for us. Again, if we are really in a relationship, that's a whole different thing. But if we suddenly dream of making love with some person that's totally different, that we never thought of, it means that you want to incorporate some of the good qualities. And that's kind of reassuring sometimes, because I've had a few clients come in to me and say, oh, last night I dreamt of making love with my teacher, and I'm really embarrassed, you know. Or there's transference in the analysis. And again, that happens very frequently where you fall in love with your analyst and you want to incorporate all these wonderful qualities that this analyst has. And I'll talk about falling in love another time too. It's a very beautiful theory because we project onto another person this perfect image and we fall in love with the image. And little by little we see that the real person is not as perfect as the image. And that's where your real relationship starts. Well, if there are no more questions, I think we'll end this for today. Thank you all.